Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
It is 5 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us for another edition of On DoD. We are just inside a month to go until the general election. Most of us here in the continental U.S. still have some time to make up our minds about candidates and ballot questions. For military members and other U.S. citizens living overseas, though, not so. For that reason, the Defense Department has dubbed this week Absentee Voting Week, trying to make sure ballots make their way back to service members' home jurisdictions in time for November 6th. We last featured DOD's Federal Voting Assistance Program on this show back in March when we talked to Bob Carey, who was the agency's director back then. He has since departed, and Pam Mitchell is now serving as acting director. She took the job in late May after serving as director of DOD's Defense Travel Management Office. She joined me in a studio at the Pentagon to talk about FVAP's activities in these final weeks. I started by asking her for a quick overview of the agency's missions and responsibilities.
Essentially, we focus on two basic things. One is promoting awareness of the right to vote for our absentee voters, and secondly, providing the tools, information, and other resources necessary so that absentee voters can exercise that right to vote if that's what they choose to do.
Mm-hmm. And what's sort of the division of labor between FVAP and the military services? Because you guys are a relatively small office, and this is a very big mission.
Well, we partner very well together to get the word out. Of course, first of all, we do prescribe policy that the services follow, and we provide various things for them. For example, we publish the voter assistance guides that their voting officers use. And we provide other things. Sometimes we are able to come up with venues that they help us with, say, going to a military bowl or something like that. But essentially it's, we put information together for them. They use it, and they conduct voter registration drives. So, again, I think it's a very good, close relationship that we have with them.
And does FVAP itself have offices and personnel around the world, or is that end of the lifting handled mostly by the military?
That end is handled mostly by the military, yes. Mm-hmm. We do go out and provide training and assistance as needed to the services locations around the world, but we are centrally located here.
And we're in the midst of what DOD has labeled Absentee Voting Week, I guess. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the activities that are going on surrounding that week?
Sure. Well, we're doing various media events, such as this one, mm-hmm. to try to help get the word out. We have online and digital advertising going on. This past Wednesday, we did a Twitter town hall, which was pretty neat. It's a good way to connect with a lot of folks at one time. And the services also are doing a variety of things, like I mentioned a couple of them earlier, and that is they are doing voter registration drives. They are publishing information on the leave and earning statements of all service members to just promote awareness in that way. Mm-hmm. And other things like on-post theaters, for example, if you were to go to a movie, you would see a public service announcement play ahead of the movie, also promoting awareness.
Mm-hmm. And when we say awareness, what do we mean? What are these announcements? What does this messaging say?
Well, from us, the messaging says, what's our latest one? Send your vote home. And so it's just raising awareness of you may be wherever you are in the world, you still have the right to vote. We want you to take advantage of your right to vote. But again, it is a personal choice. So we really want to empower them to exercise that choice by putting the information, tools, and resources out there.
And in that Twitter town hall and in other venues, what sorts of questions are you getting around this time? And I know you have a big call center and everything, too. What sorts of things do people want to know right now?
People want to know very interesting things sometimes. For example, we'll get questions, and this was before the 22nd, which was the 45-day mark at which all ballots had to be pushed out by the states,
right,
for those who had registered. But folks would want to know why they hadn't received their ballots, for example. And so we would tell them that by law the states weren't required to send them out yet. Sometimes they just need a little extra help in understanding what they need to do to register to vote. Or they'll want to know who should they call in their state if they want to go that route. So really it's a wide variety of questions that we get. I can remember one of the things that came in on the Twitter town hall was somebody said, well, isn't there somebody I can go see? And somebody else came in and said, well, when I was in the service, we used to have unit voting assistance officers. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to say, and you're absolutely right, and they still exist, and they're still there.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the right way to ask this, but what would you say is the department's attitude or even policy toward service members participating in elections? Because you can't compel people to vote, right? And I don't think there's many people who would advocate that. Is it more along the lines of we encourage you to vote, or is the department kind of neutral on that question?
It is along the lines of encouraging to vote, but also the recognition that it's a personal choice.
Electronic transmission of ballots, let's talk about that a little bit, either in one direction or in both directions. I don't know how far down the path. And this is really, I guess, to a large extent, a state and local function, since we don't have federally administered elections. How are states doing on that?
Well, a lot of states now are providing for electronic delivery of the ballot. And that's really a tremendous thing, because what does it do? It cuts out half of the cycle time for the voting process.
So, meaning from the state to the service
from
member
the
overseas?
State, exactly, for a blank ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, if you're in Afghanistan and it would take you anywhere from 14 to 17 days to get that ballot, mm-hmm. if you can get it electronically, you've now totally wiped out 14 to 17 days on the front end.
Right.
You still have to mail it back, although there are, I want to say, a handful of states that allow for electronic return. That, of course, is not our decision, and that's fully in accordance with the state laws.
Right. For example, faxes, and I think my home state, Arizona, lets you upload things onto their website and onto some kind of secure website that's dedicated to military voters. Do you know how widespread that is at this point? How many states have adopted that kind of ballot return system from the service member to the state?
I know there are some that do, but off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you how many. And some folks get excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to say this. If you are serving in an overseas location and your state allows it and your choice is not to vote or to vote using something like that, then that is a personal choice about what to do. And in those cases, I believe they also have to acknowledge that they are giving up some privacy by doing that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I know you've been doing is administering grants basically all year to states versus, you know, setting up a centrally run, federally administered electronic ballot delivery system. Do you know how states have been using that money so far? And I don't know if you have the number, but how much money roughly has gone out the door?
Well, approximately $25 million has been awarded to states and local jurisdictions. And a lot of them are using it for online voter registration and for the electronic delivery of ballots that we've been talking about, electronic delivery of the blank ballot.
Mm-hmm. And that's preferable to having a big central federally run system. For what reason?
Well, the states are those who are charged with actually pushing the ballots out. So that is not a federal responsibility. It is mm-hmm. a state responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about timelines a little bit here, because if in the cases where this is going to be an entirely mail-driven process, both to the service member and back to the service member, there's lots of places in the world, like on a carrier or in a combat outpost in Afghanistan, where even though we're a month out from the election, that is not very long if you've got to have postal mail making the round trip, right? So what are kind of the cutoffs that we should think about here?
Well, it does vary by location to location. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you're in Europe, it's roughly 8 days. Afghanistan is roughly 14 to 17. But our best advice to the military voter is once you receive your ballot, mark it and turn it around right away. Mm-hmm. That's the very best advice that we could give.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, the Military Postal Service Agency has a great plan in place to pay very special attention to ballot materials. And so they actually get a very special DOD label that goes on them, and you know, they get special handling all along the way. And then lastly, if for some reason a service member fails to get their regular absentee ballot, we do have the backup ballot, which is called the federal write-in absentee ballot, and they can use that at any time, hand-select their candidates and return that.
And it's just a write-in ballot basically all the way down the slate. You can you have to know who's running, I guess, and you have to know what offices you're voting on, but you can vote for basically anything on that ballot.
Well,
that right?
As of the 6th of October, we will pre-populate local and state candidates as well.
And FVAP does that, and you send it out to the service member?
Well, we don't send it out. It's on our website. So we're in the process of doing a quality assurance on that now. However, if a service member needed to download one of these backup ballots now, they could certainly get a blank one
mm-hmm.
and you know, put in whoever they chose.
Mm-hmm. I know one thing that happens here in the States when people have to vote, say, a provisional ballot at their polling place because they're not on the rolls for whatever reason. People really don't like doing that a lot of times because they feel like, oh, is this thing really going to get counted? Should service members feel that way if they end up having to vote on one of these federal write-in ballots? Are they going to get counted?
Absolutely, they're going to get counted.
No question by
regardless
of jurisdiction.
Absolutely. And if they use the write-in ballot and then they get their regular ballot, we would tell them, please complete your regular ballot and send that back as well, because the state is only going to count one of them.
They'll sort it out.
Absolutely.
On the back end, one way or the other. The other large population of folks that you serve besides people in uniform is federal civilians serving overseas. Can you talk a little bit about what those services are and how, if they do differ from what you provide to the military?
Well, it's all actually all overseas citizen voters, and they're as welcome to use our website and all the information and resources there as our military voters are. Single biggest difference may be that we don't have up-to-date addresses or email addresses for them, so we can't reach out in the same way.
Right.
But I will also say that we have a great partnership with Department of State. And through their embassies and consulates, they have voting assistance officers in place, and they have a very active outreach to that group of citizens.
That's probably about the only population of civilians that you do know about, non-military civilians that you do know about overseas, right? Or that somebody knows about, that somebody can track, people who work in the diplomatic corps and the foreign service, right?
Absolutely.
Pam Mitchell is the acting director of DOD's Federal Voter Assistance Program. We'll come back after a short break and talk about one of the issues that's plagued military voting for years, service members not getting their absentee ballots sent to them in time to return them by Election Day. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbian. Welcome back to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Our guest this week is Pam Mitchell, acting director of the Pentagon's Federal Voter Assistance Program, which helps both military members and overseas U.S. citizens register to vote and cast absentee ballots. One action Congress has taken to help has been to require state and local officials to send absentee ballots to military and overseas voters at least 45 days before an election. But in the last several election cycles, a huge number of military members never got those ballots or never got them in time.
Your surveys found in 2008, 16% of voters didn't get those absentee ballots in time for the election, so they had to use that federal write-in process. And then in 2010, it was 29%, according to your surveys. Do you have a reasonable amount of confidence that those numbers are going to fall in this year's election? Do you have any way of knowing that yet?
We really have no way of knowing that. We believe that the electronic delivery of the ballot will help that tremendously.
But no feedback from states as of this point as to whether or not they've actually gotten those ballots out of the door before that 45-day cutoff?
We have no reason to believe that they have not,
okay.
But we're certainly monitoring that very carefully, as you might imagine.
Understood. Well, want to talk a little bit about the recent DOD Inspector General's report. You've been getting beat up on the Hill and in some quarters of the press over the main finding of that report, which was that out of the 229 legally required voting assistance offices on military bases around the world, the IG investigators were not able to make contact with those offices using the information on FVAP's website about half the time. Can you talk about why that happened and what you've done to correct it?
Yes. First of all, let me emphatically say that the offices do exist.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the contact list was a bit dated. As soon as we found that out, we went into action to update it, did a few scrubs over the summer. And starting about 3 weeks ago and on a weekly basis, and we will continue up to the election, we are reaching out every single week to validate both phone and email contact information. And we're very confident, we just completed a round this week, we're very confident that the information is up to date.
Do you have any sense of how frequently those offices are being utilized by service members, anecdotal or otherwise?
I don't have that with me. Certainly we could provide that. The services do provide a roll-up to us quarterly, and the last one we have is for the end of June. So as of the end of June, they reported that for both the installation voter offices as well as the unit voting officers, they had helped over 550,000. And if you put that in perspective, I mean, that's the size of the Air Force plus almost the size of the entire Marine Corps. So that's quite a lot of folks who've already helped at the end of June.
And what kind of work happens in those offices? What kind of services can people get when they go there?
They can get anything they need on voter assistance. So they can register. They can find out how to register. They can get the federal postcard application. They can actually ask the person there to turn that in for them. And that sometimes happens. So just anything from A to Z for voting assistance, they can do any of those things.
Mm-hmm. The IG also noted in that report that the IG had been told by DOD officials, unnamed DOD officials, that there was a feeling that, that the brick-and-mortar offices weren't necessarily the most cost-effective way to do voting assistance, to, especially to this overwhelmingly young and male audience that you serve, really. I mean, Is that an official department position at this point? Are you considering going to Congress and asking for relief from that requirement that, that you have these offices all over the world and turn it into a voluntary program as the IG recommended?
Well, we're trying to take the long view of that. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes things get talked about like there's a single point of failure. Mm. And in the voting assistance programs that we have, both ours and the services, there is no single point of failure. There are a multitude of ways for folks to get assistance. So that would be the voter assistance office. It would be the unit voting officers, and there are thousands of those around the world helping folks. It would be our online website, our wizards, our static downloads. It would be our call center that operates 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. 5 days a week. So there's a variety of ways for people to get assistance. And what we're suggesting is that, you know, some of those ways may be better than others. And we certainly want to take a studied look at that with all appropriate stakeholders to determine what the best way to reach folks is.
Okay, but no department position yet on whether or not it should be voluntary versus mandatory.
Well, I'm on the record as saying that I believe that we should allow service secretaries to determine the best of use of those at their discretion.
Gotcha.
But having said that, again, that's the long view. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that tomorrow we think we should do that, but that really we should work for with all appropriate parties to determine what is the best way to reach our service members.
Understood. One of the other issues that's come up, and you're, I'm sure, very well aware of the Military Voter Protection Project's survey of a few state elections officials, that some of the numbers they were most worried about were in Virginia and North Carolina, where there were 1.4% of military voters who had actually requested a ballot at that point, which was, I guess, probably a month or so ago now, 1.7% in North Carolina. They're worried about those numbers. Do you have reason to be worried about those numbers?
Well, let me tell you about what we do know.
Yeah.
And what our perspective is based on the number of downloads of the federal postcard application from our website.
Mm-hmm.
So if we compare where we are now with where we were in 2004, and the reason I use 2004 is because that's the last time we had a sitting president running for re-election. And so in comparing those, we are actually now running in downloads just a little bit higher than we were this time in 2004. So for us, that's a very favorable number.
It does not suggest to you that there's a failure in the system somewhere, because people have drawn that conclusion that the DOD is not living up to its responsibility to make it as easy as possible to vote if you're a service member.
Absolutely do not agree with that. Voting assistance is really, truly the best that it has ever been. All the myriad of avenues that are out there. Here we are talking today, promoting awareness. The Twitter town hall that we did, the various other engagements that we've done, the call center that is in place, the installation voter assistance offices, the thousands of unit voting assistance officers, just all of the many things that are going on to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
That we will continue to do.
I believe you served in the Army as an officer for quite a while, and you've talked about that before, how mm-hmm. different the process is compared to then. Talk about what it was like then, vice now.
Well, it truly was all paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you didn't know what to do yourself, you really did have to seek somebody out to help you with it, or to call your state or to do whatever. And now, and you've probably heard me say, I would love to have had these resources available where I could go online and easily and quickly get the information that I need to register and apply for my ballot.
Pam Mitchell is director of DOD's Federal Voting Assistance Program. We'll come back for one more segment with her as the military makes one last push to help military members vote during absentee voting week. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DOD. I'm Jared Servin. One more segment this hour with Pam Mitchell. She is the acting director of DOD's Federal Voting Assistance Program. Just took the job in May after the former director resigned. We talked in the last segment about independent surveys that show in many states a very, very small number of military members have actually requested absentee ballots for the upcoming election, as low as 1.4% in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Mitchell tells me, as she's previously told Congress, that voter participation rates are not a good measure of the effectiveness of DOD's voting assistance programs.
Because voting, at the end of the day, is a personal choice. So we can put every tool in the universe at your disposal, make you very aware of your right to vote, make you very aware of what dates are, of when the election is. We can do all of those things. But at the end of the day, it's up to you to choose whether or not you're going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Another important point to consider is that we are one resource that's available. There are many others. For example, you could go to your home state to register. You might do it online. You might do it in person. And there are also private websites and other organizations that offer assistance. So there's any number of ways that you might do it. I was walking down the street in Arlington last weekend, and somebody stopped me and said, "Hey, can I help you register to vote?" And, of course, we would not know that was occurring.
Yeah, there's so much out there that you guys just never see because of our fragmentary election system. And I guess you won't see this until you do your post-election survey for this year, right?
That's correct.
When can we expect to see some of those numbers? What's the lag time on those?
Well, the active duty military post-election survey will go out the day after the election. But it's likely going to be, by the time it's fielded and returned and analyzed, it's probably going to be March before we have information available.
We talked earlier about some of the technology that the states have rolled out with the grant funding that you provided. Let's talk about some of the technology that FVAP itself has created. You've got a pretty clean and easy-to-use website that you guys ran, and just a mobile app that you just rolled out. Talk about those, if you would.
Sure. The website offers a variety of different things, and I think you're referring to our online wizards, as we call
yes.
them, which really walks you through in 10 or 15 minutes the ability to register to vote and to ask for an absentee ballot. So it's really pretty. Had, of course, never used it now that I've been a civilian, and it didn't exist when I was in uniform. But just walking through it, I was very impressed with what's there. And just at the end of August, we rolled out our mobile app, which really is a mobile website, so that from anywhere you are, as long as you have a smartphone or a tablet, you can access our website.
What's the prospect of, I don't know if you have a timeline or a goal, of fully electronic voting both directions for every service member, regardless of what state or what jurisdiction they come from?
We do not, and we are not advocating internet voting. We do have a legislative mandate that dates back about a decade telling us to do a military internet demonstration project. However, a few years after that, we were told that it would be our discretion to wait until such time as appropriate standards for such a system were prescribed by the National Institute of Standards and Technology and the Election Assistance Commission. So we are, as you might imagine, having discussions with them and looking at various things to make us smarter about the best way to proceed. And we're hoping, as we've started these discussions in the past, to continue doing that this coming year with all appropriate interested parties.
I wasn't aware of that. So are we still waiting for NIST and the EAC to finalize their recommendations and their standards on this?
We do not have final standards. That's correct. But again, we're having an ongoing discussion with them.
Mm-hmm. Why would you not advocate complete electronic two-way delivery here? Because that's the main barrier, right, is people not getting these mail ballots to them and back to their elections offices in time.
Well, we're not advocating it right now because we're uncertain as to security of such a system. I guess a good way to say it would be we don't know what we don't know right now. So we're not advocating for it. We're not advocating against it. We are advocating that we move forward in a smart manner, talking to all the appropriate folks so that the National Institute of Standards and Technology and the Election Assistance Commission can do what they need to do to put appropriate standards in place.
Is it fair to say that we've learned from what we've done so far, or mostly what the states have done, really, I think, as far as implementing at least these one-way ballot delivery systems? Because they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't feel that there was some level of security baked into these things.
We are certainly hoping to learn a lot from what they're doing right now. I would say that we don't have, final information in yet, and there's certainly still a lot of work to be done in that regard.
I guess really the last thing I would ask is what do you see as the biggest challenges as you, you know, march through these last few weeks before the election, both for your agency or for the military services providing access to ballots out there?
I think the biggest thing is just continuing to promote awareness and continuing to make sure that folks are, to overuse the word, aware of the information, the resources that are available to them so that they can successfully exercise their right to vote if we choose to. And we have had a very active email campaign and literally have sent out millions of email to our service members with .mil addresses to continue to remind them about this.
So in theory, that should hit everyone in the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Air Force, right?
Yes, it should.
Okay, so if folks would like any more information about how to request ballots, how to cast ballots from overseas, let's give out some website and some phone information if we can here.
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, the Federal Voting Assistance Program website is www.fvap.gov, and our call center phone number is 1-800-438-VOTE.
Excellent. All right. Pam Mitchell, thanks so much for talking with us today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Pam Mitchell is Acting Director of DOD's Federal Voting Assistance Program, talking with us during DOD's Absentee Voting Week, with just a month to go for overseas absentee ballots to make their way back to local election jurisdictions here in the U.S. We talked earlier about the DOD Inspector General's self-initiated report on FVAP, which found, among other things, that about half the military's voting assistance offices turned out to be unreachable using the contact information on FVAP's own website. When we return for our final segment, we'll hear a short excerpt from the IG's congressional testimony a couple weeks ago. This is on DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Welcome back to On DOD here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. As we head toward the top of the hour, we will stick with the topic of voting assistance for military members and Americans living overseas, provided through the Federal Voting Assistance Program. We spent most of the hour talking with Pam Mitchell, FVAP's acting director. You heard references in that interview to a recent DOD Inspector General's report, which found some problems with military voting assistance, and in particular, outdated contact information for military voting assistance offices around the world. We're going to hear in this last segment from the Deputy Inspector General who prepared that report. Former Ambassador Kenneth Moorfield is the Deputy DOD Inspector General for Special Plans and Operations. He detailed his conclusions before a hearing of the House Armed Services Committee, starting with the legislation that governs military voting assistance.
In 2009, the Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act, or MOVE Act, was passed. It established various programs to help military and other overseas citizen voters to register and to vote. The MOVE Act required the military services to have an installation voting assistance office on every installation worldwide, with the exception of those in a war zone. The use of federal write-in absentee ballots for federal elections was to be expanded. DOD, through its FVAP office, was intended to implement a number of new electronic voting support programs and systems. The FVAP office also had to report to the Congress annually on their assessment of compliance with voting assistance laws and the effectiveness of voting assistance programs, including programs implemented by each of the military services. In August 2012, the DODIG released a self-initiated report assessing key obligations and actions carried out by DOD and FVAP under the MOVE Act. We specifically focused on the establishment of voting assistance offices on every military installation worldwide and the sufficiency of survey data used to assess DOD's voting assistance program effectiveness related to the 2010 elections. DOD implementing instructions for the establishment of the IVAOs required robust walk-in offices that DOD estimated would be staffed with 1 to 2 full-time personnel to perform the required voting assistant functions. To determine if the services had established a robust IVAO presence on all installations worldwide, we examined FVAP's official list of installations as of March 2012. We immediately noted that the list was in some instances either inaccurate or incomplete, with installations such as Fort Meade, Maryland, Camp Casey, Korea, and the U.S. Army Garrison in Kaiserslautern, Germany, not listed, and other bases listed that no longer existed. It became apparent that installation consolidations or closures resulting from the 2005 BRAC program, such as the consolidation of the 12 multi-service joint bases, in part had contributed to omissions and duplications. To test the accessibility of the IVAOs, we placed ourselves in the shoes of potential military voters seeking help, using the official FFAP website information as of March 2012. We attempted to contact each of the 229 IVAOs listed. It turned out that not all of the FFAP contact information was current. We initially called the IVAO phone number. If no one answered, we left a voicemail asking for a return call. And if there was an email address, followed up with an email. If we could not make contact on our initial attempt, we called installation telephone operators or accessed installation websites to obtain updated IVAO contact information. Ultimately, in about 50% of the cases, we were unable to contact IVAOs using our updated version of the FFAP website installation list and concluded that the offices either did not exist or were not reasonably accessible. In partial explanation, some senior military officials pointed out that the law had not provided additional funding, which FFAP estimated at $15 to $20 million per year, necessary to fund at least one assistance person at each IVAO, and bases, moreover, were not funded internally by DOD to enable commanders to meet this obligation. On another issue, the FFAP 2010 post-election survey report to Congress, dated September 2011, asserted that voting assistance was effective in the 2010 election because, one, DOD statistical analysis indicated military populations registered and voted at higher rates than civilians, and two, that military participation had improved appreciably between 2006 and 2010. To determine if these conclusions were reliable and accurately reflected the effectiveness of DOD voting assistance programs, DODIG's Quantitative Methods Division assessed their survey methodology. They noted that only 15% of military personnel contacted had responded to the survey, and that FFAP's conclusions in the reports could be considered inconclusive and would have been more credible with a higher response rate. We recommended that the FFAP office design a survey that will increase the 2012 post-election survey response rate. Finally, I should add that during our assessment, we observed that the FFAP had made significant efforts to develop and implement a military voter communications plan. This was intended, we believe, in part and primarily perhaps even, to get to younger voting personnel. They used information technology of various kinds, including social media, direct email notifications, and web-based systems. FFAP officials indicated that these initiatives were having a positive impact. For example, they noted that as they began their outreach and communication program for the 2012 primaries, activity on their web-based systems significantly increased. Feedback from the military services incorporated in our March 2012 report to Congress indicated that they, too, were increasing use of targeted advertising, social media, and other easy-to-use online tools to more effectively reach younger service members.
Former Ambassador Kenneth Moorfield, the Deputy DOD Inspector General for Special Plans and Operations, testifying before the House Armed Services Committee. As we finish up our hour on military voting assistance, we'll listen to a couple more minutes of the hearing before we close out the hour. This is Moorfield being questioned by Joe Wilson, Republican Congressman from South Carolina and the Chairman of the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Military Personnel.
I'm particularly concerned it's been identified that in the offices that have been established, that of the 229, that it's been by the Inspector General report, and Ambassador, I appreciate bringing this information out, that in fact, that only 114 of the 129, or of the 229, that could there be access and contact. So your report was very revealing. But at the same time, you indicate that maybe we don't need that many offices. So I would be interested in hearing why we don't need that many offices. Additionally, what do you propose to make and improve voter participation and access?
First off, let me emphasize that compliance with the law has no alternative, and the law is very specific about the requirements. There is a certain doubt, I think, in the part of some of our military commanders as to what qualifies as an installation, and that's understandable. In some cases, installations today are covering three or four outlying bases. There is a considerable distance between some of these installation voting offices and bases that they support. It would appear to us that a careful review is probably necessary to determine where we actually have these offices, how they are functioning, and what their capabilities are to support any and all installations and bases they may be responsible for. Obviously, the size of bases varies, the size of installation, voting office coverage varies. So that, you know, remains to be seen as to what is appropriate given the size of the responsibilities and extent of the responsibilities of IVAOs. There was another part to your question.
And that is what, really what do you propose to increase participation and access?
Well, I truly believe, as I also was a former military officer, would have been very grateful, you know, for the kind of access that I think military officers have today, particularly younger ones that are well schooled in the use of IT and various social media mechanisms. There's no metric yet that can confirm that other than ex post facto after elections, but I believe that can be determined whether or not that is demonstrating and indicating that it is making a difference. So I think that's important. For the immediate election, the question is, and I think this has been brought up by several members of the Senate, how a federal voting application postcard could be made available on an expedited basis to individual military voters who want to vote and do not decline, in other words, the offer. There's a way to get to them. We've got unit voting officers all over the world, as was pointed out by Ms. Mitchell, and I think that it is certainly feasible to ensure that those that want to vote get their application. So that is one of the considerations I think needs to be considered for serious and fairly urgent implementation.
Former Ambassador Kenneth Moorfield, the Deputy DOD Inspector General for Special Plans and Operations, testifying before the House Armed Services Committee. And we will squeeze in one more question from Susan Davis of California. She's the ranking member of the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Military Personnel.
You mentioned that over half of them you couldn't actually talk to somebody there, I guess. They didn't have a response. To what extent did you have an opportunity to really assess how significant their operation was?
In terms of how you measure the effectiveness of IVAOs, one of the ways you can do that, of course, is the incidence of contact that is made with them by potential military voters and what services they specifically provide. To the best of my knowledge right now, the incidence of use is not what was expected. Now, what are the reasons for that? You asked how far we went and how far we could go. We had a questionnaire of 50 different points that we raised with any office we could make contact with, including how they were functioning, what degree of activity they had, and so forth. We tried to go the extra mile, given that we couldn't go to 229 installations and eyes on determine what exactly they were doing. So I think that in terms of your question as to whether or not they're necessary, it's still perhaps early stage. Perhaps some IVAOs are not fully developed or established. I can't definitively determine that because we just couldn't make contact with half of them. That didn't mean they didn't exist, and maybe that they were fully functional. We can't confirm that one way or the other. But I do, as I mentioned to the chairman before, believe that in the world, particularly a huge voting population percentage-wise of younger voters in the military, overseas, that their tendency, like my own daughter, I've noticed, is not to find information anywhere else but through some IT mechanism. So whether we like that or not, that tends to be the reality.
Ambassador Kenneth Moorfield, the Deputy DOD Inspector General for Special Plans and Operations, testifying before the House Armed Service Subcommittee on Military Personnel as we finish up our hour on federal voting assistance and the Federal Voting Assistance Program. If you missed our earlier interview, which took up most of the show this week, with Pam Mitchell, the Acting Director of FVAP, we will have that along with the rest of this program online at federalnewsradio.com. That's going to do it for this edition of On DOD. Very glad you could join us. I'm Jared Serbu. We'll talk to you next week. So long.
You've been listening to On DOD with Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.